Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Hello, and welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, and I'm going to be joined here in a minute by my co-host David Ramil and a very, very special guest. We're really excited to have him. It's the Miami Heat's play-by-play announcer, Mr. Eric Reed, the one and only. This interview we did with him over the phone was just fantastic. I mean, he had so much great information, so many great stories. Where did Kaboom come from? How was the big three and covering that? Who are his all-time Miami Heat starting five? I mean, just some really, really great stuff. Let's just get right into it because I can't wait.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Let's go! Let's go!
29th season of Heat basketball.
Yeah, it's been a tumultuous summer, obviously. So what's the next step for you and how you prepare for the upcoming season? You know, obviously media day is a couple weeks from now, but then training camp begins shortly thereafter. So how do you get ready for the upcoming season now?
Well, sort of, you know, there's a lot of events in September that get me going. I'm going to tape our first Inside Heat show of the new season on our D-League affiliate in Sioux Falls that had a record-setting D-League championship campaign last year, so we'll help tell that story for Heat Nation. And then in a couple of weeks, we got the NBA broadcasters meetings in New Jersey. And then, as you said, Heat Media Days on the 26th, training camp opens the next day. And on October 4th, we'll be doing our first preseason game against the Washington Wizards. It's going to be a very busy season. We've got 6 of the 8 preseason games on Fox Sports Sun, and then 80 of the 82 regular season games will be also on Fox Sports Sun. So we got a busy year ahead, and you start building your charts. As in the next couple of days, I'll start building my Heat preseason chart and then continue on to our preseason opponents and give you sort of a running head start, because once you get into the season and you're playing 4 or 5 games a week, there's game day. And then there's that constant pressure to get yourself prepared for the next game day.
You know, I don't think a lot of people understand how much work goes into announcing the game. The players are so front-facing. I think a lot of fans that watch it and experience it on TV don't really understand it. Can you kind of take us through quickly, like, your day-to-day process on game day, how much prep goes into your job?
I never leave it all for game day, unless you're in a back-to-back situation, and then you've probably already begun preparing for both ends of the back-to-back, you know, a day or two or three before you get there. So there's some anticipation there. Everybody's got a system that they do. I would say for me, the average game prep is anywhere between 4 and 7 hours for each game. And, every announcer keeps a chart, no matter what the sport is. My chart is, in computerized in many ways. It's a great chart that a number of broadcasters are using. It is tailored to what you're used to doing by hand. And this gentleman named Brian Friedman out of Washington, D.C. has developed a system where he ties what is close to what you were doing into his system. And he's hooked into Stats Inc., and with the press of a button, every player in my system, their statistics for that season get officially updated. What they did in the game before gets automatically updated. The player's biographical information in terms of height, weight, years in the league, and what college, that's already in my system. So I don't have to do that, minutiae type work for each and every game. There are certain things that just get updated. Now, I also have plenty of room on my chart for, I won't say some handwritten notes and some other entries that I type into my computer program. I travel with a portable printer and a laptop, and we're sort of a mobile force, so we can do it at home or on the road with relative ease. You're gonna read the clips of everything that's going on in the league on a daily basis, And what I always like to do with the help of DirecTV and the NBA package, you know what your schedule is. I always like to watch the team the Heat's playing next, you know, within that week on DirecTV. And not only are you getting to hear your broadcasting peers around the league, but more importantly, and that is important because you get to hear how other guys do the same job. But you get to see the other teams play in advance. So, and then there's the game night prep where we get to sit down and spend 10, 15 minutes with each coach. There's never a game that we miss doing that. It's the greatest source of fresh information on a nightly basis, talking to each head coach. And, you know, you pick a couple of players on each side. And you find that the stories that you tell are more important than the stats that you use. But you want to be able to sprinkle both in. There's no set recipe or formula of how to do it. You just try to find a nice blend and let the game dictate what direction your comments go in.
I'm glad you brought that up because I actually got a chance to see you and Tony Fiorentino in action in a game up here in Orlando last season. I was covering the game as well. And it amazed me how well prepared you were and how many questions you were asking coaches and players before the game to help prepare. Because, you know, obviously as a fan or as a viewer, we listen to the polished end product, but we don't know how much work goes into it. But at least I got a chance to see you behind the scenes and asking coaches, talking to everybody and all the work. And despite the fact that you've been doing this for decades, the way that you keep information updated, the way that you maintain relationships, it was a real honor for me to be able to see that personally and to see all the work that you put into it.
Yeah, I appreciate those comments. It's funny, those pregame meetings we have with the coaches, the league a few, you know, I want to say 5 to 10 years ago, made sure that each coach spoke before the game, 15 minutes apart. So it would not be a reach for any media person to sit in on both sessions. And that seems like a no-brainer that you'd go to that each night. Yet not everybody does, but, you know, I find that it's a great way to prepare, to help you prepare for each game. Because you're getting fresh stuff that, you know, writers will tweet some of it out right away, you know, and get their stories online. But a lot of times these are going to be sidebar items in the next day's paper. We're going to have what we feel is the best of those conversations on the air that night. And you don't force anything in, at least you try not to. But as I said, the game sort of dictates what direction you go in. But you've got 3 to 5, you know, subjects that you can cover with each coach and sort of, you know, inform the viewers of what those coaches said, you know, going into each telecast. So from a tactical point in doing your job, I think it's essential. A secondary benefit of it is the respect that it brings you from other media members like yourself that noticed it. And most importantly, the other head coaches in the league that notice that you're there each night, taking the time and the professional courtesy to ask good questions and to educate yourself to the highest level you can about their team also. You know, even though I'm always going to try to reflect the Heat emotion and, you know, the Heat news and mindset of the moment, it's the NBA. I feel like I'd only be doing half the job if I didn't, you know, discuss, you know, what that other team was going through. You know, Heat fans can be very familiar with what our team is doing. Right. But each night it gives us a chance to sort of, you know, open up what the opponent has done and what kind of season they're having. So it's pro basketball. There are great stories to be told. And I wanted to be able to, I take pride in telling both sides of the story each night.
We've talked a little bit about the fans so far. And not too long ago, a lot of your job was just, you know, consumed by the fan and the viewer, and there wasn't much two-way interaction. Now with social media, I've noticed that you and Tony will tweet in the middle of, you know, timeouts or commercials back at fans. How have fans in general changed, and how has that changed your preparation and your job during game day?
Well, it's changed a lot. Social media has changed the world a lot, and it's changed the way we cover sports and the way we do our job. I keep Twitter open, you know, on my iPad right next to me. You know, sometimes I'll have it on the NBA scoreboard if we're in a playoff race. You want to keep track of how other teams are doing. And I keep Twitter open because, A, you're going to get some feedback from writers that are covering the game. And there may be a statistical nugget or a fact that they have, and I certainly don't want to miss, miss out on any of that. I think secondarily, you know, it gives fans an opportunity to interact with the broadcaster during the game. Now, can it be a little distracting? Yes, if you let it be. I will never tweet in the middle of action. There are times I will tweet somebody back at a timeout, but more importantly, I get the feel of what's lighting the fan's lamp on that particular night. Are they having issues with anything? Are they having a problem with anything I said or question about the game? Things of that nature. And if I make a mistake and a fan points it out to me on Twitter, I'm going to give that person credit and make that correction on the air if possible, to set the record straight and correct. So it's a great way to gauge what those fans are thinking, and certainly a way to interact with them and also not miss out on any nuggets that anybody else might have looking at the same game.
That's great that you've maintained that kind of flexibility and been able to adapt to the times. And personally, I've always enjoyed the fact that you do keep that open mind to working not just with fans, but also when you cover other teams. And you also, you know, you tell the stories from both sides of the equation. But I had a question specific to Heat culture, because obviously you've been with the team since its very inception, and you've seen the team evolve over time. You've seen Heat culture evolve. You know, this was a fan base that was, you know, there wasn't one when the team started off back in the late 80s, mostly a city filled with transplants and things of that sort. And now all of a sudden you see a much more embedded Heat culture, especially with the fans and everything else. What's your perspective on how the fan base has changed over time?
Well, I think, you know, it's grown. You know, the team is, you know, going on year number 29 now. So we've been through our first couple of generations of Heat fans. Certainly success, and the kind of success the Heat have had over the last 10 to 11 years in particular, and in a more general sense over the last 20 plus years since Pat Riley came to the Heat as president and head coach. He's the guy that changed the culture. You know, he made it a championship seeking, championship contending organization long before they won their first title in 2006. But the fact is, since 2006, you know, since 2005, you know, there's been five or six trips to the conference finals, you know, five or six conference championships, three NBA titles, the four straight trips to the finals, which only the Lakers and Celtics had done before. This grows your fan base not only nationally but globally, and through Twitter, you become aware that there are fans following and watching the Miami Heat, you know, literally all over the world. So, and I also think some of the high moments and even some of the low moments. Listen, when you have LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh on the same team, and you're playing for the championship four straight years, winning two in a row. The 2013 title was as exciting as any championship I've ever witnessed in NBA history. That unbelievable seven-game series against the Spurs, you know, where Game 6 went to overtime and Game 7 went down to the final minute. One of the great series of all time. So this grows your fan base. But what really solidified this Heat fan base currently is when LeBron left and went back to Cleveland. I think the Heat fans over the last 2 years since LeBron left and the Big Three has broken up, I think it's been two of the best years that the Heat fan base has ever had, because it was a closing of the ranks, a great feeling of pride. The term Heat lifer came into being, and it is a great camaraderie and feeling in what we now refer to as Heat Nation, and it's really become a global nation of Heat fans that we know we're speaking to each and every night. So you will see how the fan base responds this year. You know, the loss of Dwayne Wade in the offseason was a great, great jolt. It sort of begins that new era of Heat basketball a little sooner than any of us were anticipating. But life moves on, and you know, in life you learn this, and certainly in sports. Every year it's a new team and new challenges, and now we'll be watching Hassan Whiteside and Goran Dragic and young players like Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson, and we'll enjoy this team's journey of trying to scratch and claw their way through the 82 games to try to earn a spot in the playoffs. So no matter what kind of season you have, it's our job to tell that team's story, and we take pride in doing that.
We do definitely want to talk a little bit more about Dwayne Wade in a few minutes. But you did mention the game six of those NBA finals and some of the great moments with the big three and everything. Going throughout your whole career, what's the most memorable call, if you can even pick one, that just kind of sticks with you?
Well, I don't have one. I mean, obviously, you know, some of the biggest games that we've played in and won, I have not broadcast on TV, but I do a sort of a closed circuit call of all the Heat playoff games that the Heat record for archive purposes. So I have called all those games. Certainly, you know, in 06 at Dallas, you know, doing my taped call of that championship was a tremendous thrill, winning game six after going down in that series 0-2 and then winning four straight. You know, that was a phenomenal feeling. The franchise's first championship, it was on the road. It was incredible experience to go through, and I'll never forget that. And I think, you know, all the great calls that accompanied the greatness that Dwayne Wade brought the Heat. And I think, you know, it's funny, I wouldn't have known this, but we did our 2000th game a year ago, and they interviewed a number of the players and, you know, about certain calls that they remembered. And Dwayne remembered this one call early in his career where he had a tremendous slam dunk at home. And my, you know, spontaneous call to moment was something to the effect of, oh, my God, he jumped right out of the building. He's Superman. And because Wade remembered it, I certainly remembered it, and that stands out as one of my favorite calls. But I don't hold on to that. I mean, I try very rarely to pre-plan anything, and the spontaneity is the fun part of the job. And, you know, we'll leave it at that, I guess.
Yeah. We've been doing a recent series where we've been going down and breaking down the top five players at each position in Heat history, and it's given us and our listeners a great opportunity to remember some of the more famous names and not so famous names, guys that might have spent a couple of seasons here but had a major impact during their limited tenure. Do you have a starting five that you would, you know, elect as far as like your favorite players or players that you've enjoyed watching the most during your tenure with Miami?
Well, certainly there are a lot of favorite players that have come through here, you know, back to the earliest years of, you know, Ronnie Cicely and Sherman Douglas. Absolutely. Ronnie was our first college draft pick out of Syracuse, the first year of the franchise. Sherm came in year two, also from Syracuse. Those are two guys I was very close with through their college careers. They played at Syracuse. I was a radio broadcaster in the Big East back in the 80s, working with Providence College in the 1987 Final Four. My Providence team and their Syracuse team met in the national championship Final Four at the Superdome in New Orleans. And, you know, within 2 years, we were riding the same bus with the Miami Heat. So those are things you don't forget. We had a couple of former Providence players that passed through here, and Marty Conlon, Eric Murdoch. It was always special to reunite with guys that you knew from their college careers. But in terms of, you know, it's funny, I was thinking about this. You guys prepped me for the fact that you'd be asking this question. And, you know, it's hard to answer because are you asking for the best player that ever played that position or the cumulative impact they made in their Heat careers? So I'm going to go more along that front. I mean, certainly with Shaquille O'Neal going into the Hall of Fame, probably the most talented center that the Heat have ever had. But he's not going to make my first team All-Miami Heat. I'm going to give the center spot to Alonzo Mourning. I think his body of work with Heat speaks for itself. At power forward, you know, our first power forward was Grant Long, and he holds a place in the heart of the longtime Heat fan. I think during the 90s when the Heat had their first contending teams, P.J. Brown was the right-hand man of Alonzo Mourning up front and was terrific in his role. But I don't think there's any question that the best power forward in Heat history is the one we currently hope continues his career in Miami, and that's Chris Bosh. Small forward, I mean, come on, you know who that is. LeBron James, his 4 years here left an indelible imprint, you know, for the great, great years that any franchise ever have, and he's the most talented player the Heat's ever had. The best career in a Heat uniform is our two-guard, Dwayne Wade. I think, you know, another 50 years could go by, maybe 100 years. And I don't say this lightly. I think Dwayne Wade is going to go down as the greatest player in franchise history, maybe forever, because how many times are you going to get a superstar stay put for 13 years, 12 of those years he was an all-star, you know, five times in the finals, three championships. You know, he's at the top of about 10 or 12 Heat records, including games, playoff games, points, assists, steals. I mean, it's incredible what he's done. I don't think anybody will ever surpass that. So he's the greatest player in Heat history for a long time coming. And the best point guard we've ever had. You know, I've had my favorites, but that's pretty clear cut. Tim Hardaway, the greatest point guard to ever wear a Heat uniform.
I mean, we're going through a lot of players, and there's been hundreds and hundreds of players that have passed through the organization and people that have passed through. Who among them is maybe the biggest or most fun or craziest personality that you've come across?
Well, I would probably be Shaquille O'Neal. Biggest guy, biggest personality, so charismatic, brought the Heat, you know, a national and global audience. He was a game changer for the Miami Heat. And the personality was real. It was colorful. It was flamboyant. He brought a lot of very positive attention to the Miami Heat. I'd have to say he had the biggest personality.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, especially in light of Pat Riley's recent comments where he mentioned that O'Neal was the best acquisition in team history. And clearly, you know, when he acquired Zoe in 95 and even LeBron in 2010, there have been some big moments throughout, you know, from a personnel standpoint. Do you see eye to eye with Riley's standpoint there that Shaq's acquisition was the biggest in franchise history?
Well, if that's what Pat Riley felt, I understand those sentiments, because it did globalize Miami. It took us from, you know, I'd say a middleweight contender, you know, with a chance at doing something. You know, those teams in the 90s with Zoe and P.J. Brown and Hardaway and Marley and Mashburn and Vashawn Leonard, those were great teams. I mean, that was a 61-win team back in 96, 97, 95, 96. So these were great teams, you know, circumvented by the Chicago Bulls. But, you know, Shaq took the Heat to that heavyweight elite status. But for me, the acquisition of LeBron James as a free agent, you know, to me, that's the greatest impact of any move that was ever made. You know, Shaq got the Heat to two finals and one championship. LeBron, four straight finals and two championships. Doing by that math, I think it's, for me, it's clear cut that LeBron was the biggest acquisition in franchise history.
I mean, chemistry was so important to those big three teams. Chemistry is also really, really important for a broadcast booth. We as viewers can sense when the broadcast booth can play off of each other and feed off of each other, and when they can't even. To you, what's chemistry? Why is that so important to a broadcast booth, and how do you develop that? Is that even possible to manufacture?
Well, I think it's best if you don't have to manufacture if it comes in a natural way. That's the best way to have chemistry. But certainly, you know, you could do things if you were paired with a stranger that you never work with. You know, you just come into it with respect and decency and common sense. And I always say this, whether you're trying to show it or hide it, if you're on the air that many nights a year with a fan base doing 82 games, you know, all of our personalities come out. And you know, I think that's been apparent for most listeners and viewers that have been with us for a while. I think people understand the kind of friendship and relationship Tony Fiorentino and I have shared for the last 28 years. He was an original member of the first coaching staff in Heat history, right-hand man of Ron Rothstein. So Tony and I, he's from Mount Vernon, New York. I'm from Massapequa, New York. We grew up on Eastern College basketball and watching the Knicks as kids. This is, you know, a brotherhood, a friendship. You know, Tony's a little bit older than me. I look at him like the older brother I never had. Well, he's it. And I have great respect for Tony as a coach, as a teacher, as a man, and as a friend. So there's nothing manufactured or artificial. It's two guys that love the game, love the Heat, and love the fan base that we're working with every single night. So there's not that much that we have to work on in that regard. We know each other so well, both professionally and personally. We're just as relaxed as can be, and I think the two of us are very comfortable in putting the attention every single night on the players and coaches and the officials involved in that particular game. I mean, we may talk personally every now and then and let the viewers get to know who we are, but it's not about us. It's about the game and the players making that game happen. So I love working with Tony. We've been together 12 or 13 years, and, you know, there'll never be another Dr. Jack Ramsey. What a unique Hall of Fame individual he was, and I had 8 great years with him, and I've had other great broadcast partners. But I've never had this long an association with a broadcast partner who was sincerely this close a friend as Tony and I have been all these years.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Dr. Jack, because I think for a lot of the long-time Heat fans, they still identify that partnership because it was such a great one. It was right around the time when Pat Riley came on board, and it really changed the Heat culture, as you mentioned before. And I think that's when I started really watching the Heat more than anything else, and kind of listening to you and Dr. Jack and just feeling like they were part of the family. You know, when we were watching games at home and the way the camaraderie you two shared, the respect that you alluded to was clearly there. And you know, it was a great partnership and one that I really enjoyed listening to. But that's not to take anything away from what I've heard over the recent years with you and Tony. It's a great duo, and I think it's respected not just locally but around the country. But I did want to get into the upcoming season, because I just think that that's on a lot of fans and our listeners' minds there. And, you know, there's obviously been a lot of change taking place with the roster. We've got some holdovers there, and hopefully we'll see Chris Bosh in action. Do you have any kind of predictions on how do you see this team shaping up and what they might be able to accomplish next season? Obviously, there's a lot of work to be done in training camp, but from an outsider's perspective who's closely affiliated with the team, what do you see in this team that you like or don't like?
Well, it's hard to comment too much about it until you see the team play and you see this group of guys on the court. So I'm going to withhold most of my judgment, but I've got some overall feelings of a team that, listen, there's going to be some challenges replacing the offense that Dwayne Wade and has given you. So you're going to miss some offense, you're going to miss some leadership, and you're going to miss some ball handling. But there are some opportunities there. I think I start with Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside. More will be needed, more will be expected, and more opportunities will be given to both the point guard and the center. I think they're both capable of averaging 20 points or more. They're both capable of having all-star seasons. And for the Heat to have the kind of season they want, I think they'll both need to be all-stars. I think you look next to the young group of perimeter players, you know, Justice Winslow, who hopefully will take a huge step forward offensively in his second season. I think he's going to, you know, he's only 20 years old, but I think he's going to bring some of that young leadership to the team. He'll probably be the team's starting small forward game one. I think his second year teammate, Josh Richardson, also is mature beyond his NBA years. He had a terrific rookie season, and I look for more good things ahead for a guy that hopefully we'll see a lot of time at both guard spots. And Tyler Johnson, hopefully he can stay healthy and display that effort and athleticism and, you know, very versatile basketball that he's capable of. I think Deion Waiters has a chance to be a dynamic sixth man for the team. In terms of the front court, we're going to have to see how that flushes out, whether Bosh is there or not. We certainly hope for the team and for Chris that he is back. You know, I also think a guy like Josh McRoberts, who a lot of Heat fans have written off, he's had 2 disappointing injury-plagued seasons in a row. He's a wild card. I mentioned that the Heat lost a lot of ball handling, losing Joe Johnson and Deng and especially Wade. I think McRoberts is a guy that could offset some of that. And especially if Bosh is not available, and even if he is, you know, McRoberts playing some backup center or some backup four could be an important player for the Heat this year.
I mean, there's
some... And I guess what I'm expecting, too, is a very energetic, athletic, aggressive team that's going to be entertaining to watch, whether they're winning or losing. And I think they'll be competitive enough to be in or chasing a playoff spot, you know, for all or most of the season. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, every year it's 82 new adventures on the way. So, you know, you're in this business to watch the team play, and we're looking forward to the start of the preseason on October 4th. I'll tell you this, it'll be a very interesting month of October to watch Eric Spoelstra and his staff, you know, put together this new team within a month's time.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think David and I agree with you. For all the shows that we've had this offseason, we really are excited about this new group, how young, how fast, how exciting that they're going to play. That absence of Dwayne Wade is still going to be obviously and clearly felt. It's evident nobody really has their finger on the pulse of the Heat fan base like you do. How do you suspect the atmosphere will be when Wade returns to Miami for that first game?
I think it'll be a great atmosphere, but there will be a mix of joy and heartache that night, because Heat fans, and I'm among them, you know, we all wanted to see Dwayne finish his career in a Heat uniform. But I think the one thing that this experience has done for us, because it happened in the middle of the summer, we've all had time to sort of pause and reflect on it. And I think, you know, where I'm at and what I'm going to try to communicate to Heat fans is basically what most of you are already feeling. And that's a great sense of gratitude and appreciation for the 13 years we got out of the great Dwayne Wade, rather than the year or two that we won't get. And I think when it's all said and done, you know, his banner will be up there. When he retires, he'll be remembered predominantly as a Miami Heat player. And I think we'll forget the wounds and the hurt feelings of this summer and maybe this last year or two, and remember a spectacular 13-year career and the best player, the best career that Heat fans may ever see.
We really thank you so much for the time. We got one more question because we have to ask it. Where did Kaboom come from?
You guys haven't heard this one yet?
We haven't. I haven't.
We've told it on the air a number of times. We'd be happy to share it with you again. You know, this was during the time, it was the early 90s, mid-90s, and you know, Jack Ramsey and I took cabs to ball games a lot with some of the other Heat broadcasters. And especially when it was just Jack and I used to always just enjoy sitting back and watching and listening to the great Dr. Jack engage each and every cab driver we encountered in such a warm personal conversation, in the same style that he would interview players with, you know, that grandfatherly, you know, softness and sweetness, yet always insightful questions and formative responses. He was such a unique man, and he would always engage cab drivers, no matter where they were from, in the conversation. Well, it was one night in Chicago on our way to the United Center where Jack got this one gentleman who was not from the U.S. I'm not sure where he was from some country overseas. And he said he loved listening to the Chicago Bulls on radio in his cab. And he specifically said, I love listening to the games on the radio. And that got my attention. And I immediately butted into the conversation and said, really, why do you like listening on the radio so much? He said, well, the announcer, a good gentleman named Neil Funk, who was then the Bulls radio announcer, now he's doing TV for the Bulls. Right. And he said he loves Neil Funk because, you know, Neil, he says the announcer would say kaboom. And I chuckled a little bit. I said, really? When does he say kaboom? He said, well, on, you know, 3-point shots on big baskets. And I turned and I looked in the back seat to Dr. Jack. I said, isn't that something? All the information and knowledge that you try to pass along through a normal telecast, and this is what the average fan enjoyed and got turned on by, you know, a kaboom sprinkled in, and that's what this guy loved. So as a joke that night, I told Jack, I'm dropping a kaboom tonight. And that night at the United Center, I don't remember who hit the shot, but I used my first kaboom, and I've been kabooming ever since. I confessed my sin of borrowing that line from another broadcaster. I told Neil a year or two later. I'm not sure how he took it. Imitation, you know, is a great form of flattery. And it's funny, we joke about it still to this day. So I've used it a lot over the years with a lot of big threes. And I don't have a plan for it this year. I may back off on a little bit because you never want to let, you know, shtick lead the way. But I think fans do enjoy the familiarity over certain identifying calls. So there are a couple things I always keep consistent. At the beginning of every game, I always say, off we go on another Miami Heat NBA adventure. The kaboom thing pops up. But your best calls, again, are the ones that come right to mind, the spontaneity of calls. You know, the first time I thought it was the first time I ever said it, when Antoine Walker used to take those tippy toe threes, and I remember using that, and it caught on. And you just never know what's going to catch on with fans, or what's going to come from your mind out your mouth in a second's notice. But that's how Kaboom came to be, and you know, it's probably been about 15 years of kabooming Heat threes.
Hopefully we'll get another 15 years of it because, you know, personally speaking, I think I speak for a lot of people in Heat Nation. We love hearing it, and especially the evolved kibosh as well. And hopefully you'll be dropping a lot of those next season. But I really do appreciate you coming on board and giving us the story one more time. We never get tired of hearing it and all the great stories that you've shared with us today about your many years with the Heat broadcast team. And hopefully we'll get to listen to you for a few more years in the future because, We all appreciate it. We all, you know, at least personally speaking, and I think, again, I speak for a lot of people, we grew up listening to these broadcasts, and you're like a part of the family, and that's the impact that you've had on us. So we really do appreciate you coming on board.
That's so nice of you to say. It's my pleasure. You know, in this position that we're in, Tony and I and Jax, we feel like we're ambassadors, you know, for the team to every person in Heat Nation, and that means every fan that cares about the team and every player that's ever been here, whether you played here a week, a month, 10 years, or you know, we're going to treat you with respect and love and remind you that you were a part of the Heat family and, you know, will not be forgotten. We try to bring that attitude as we sort of ambassador our way through each season, you know, interacting with people that have been with this organization, whether it was coaching and playing. And, you know, we enjoy it. We enjoy sharing the stories and sharing the basketball with the great fans that follow the Miami Heat. And we also enjoy talking to you guys tonight.
Thank you so much, Eric. Thank you for all the time. Good luck this season. And have a good night.
Thank you. You do the same.
Well, that's all we have for the show today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, or you can send us mailbag questions, inquire about advertising, or just say hi. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. A big thanks to Eric Reed for joining the show today. What a fantastic interview. We'll catch you next time.